Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoff, as usual. And we have a topic that I think you'll find interesting. It's a little bit off the beaten path. We're not going to talk about a new vitamin or a new herb, or we're not going to talk about a breakthrough treatment for a specific medical condition. We're going to talk to a guy who is very influential in the field of integrative medicine in terms of health policy and getting the government and mainstream insurance companies and the establishment to recognize that integrative medicine is really something valid, worth subsidizing with our taxpayer dollars and our insurance premiums. And he is an activist on behalf of the integrative medicine community. By that I mean not just holistic medical doctors, but also acupuncturists and naturopaths and chiropractors. And he's really got the fire in the belly when it comes to mainstreaming natural medicine in this country. He is the editor and publisher of something called the Integrator Blog News and Reports. He is the executive director of something that has a complicated name, the Academic Consortium for Complementary and Alternative Healthcare. But in the title, what's implicit is that now this is about universities and medical schools. The idea is to go mainstream. Now, in my many colloquies and conversations with John, I felt at times that we're a little bit on different sides of the fence, because I'm sort of a renegade. I'm outside the medical establishment. I've sort of given up on the establishment because all too often the establishment is dismissive of complementary and alternative medicine. John, however, is crusading to make integrative medicine more mainstream. And so we're coming at it from different perspectives, but I thought we'd have a lively conversation about it. Welcome to the program, John. It's nice having you on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
Thank you, Ron. It's a pleasure being here, and yes, I do appreciate you inviting me in, given the fact that we don't always see eye to eye, and I've enjoyed our back and forth through the years.
Okay, well, so, you know, while we're talking about the controversy, you know, the battle lines are drawn between some people in the alternative medicine community who say, look, we don't want the government involved, we don't want Obamacare to advance the cause of integrative medicine, because too often government has let us down. You, on the other hand, and there are many people within the complementary medicine community, see hope in new legislation, which actually, at the very least, pays lip service to the idea that we need to combat disease in this country, not just with drugs and surgery, but with natural techniques. So why don't you help frame the argument?
Well, I, like you, have been at it for a while. My work began in 1983, and as you will recall, and I'm sure many of your listeners, that was the era of utter polarization. If there was an article written about non-conventional care, there was always somebody from the National Council against Fraud there to lambaste you as a
So there's class. Actually something called the National Council Against Health Fraud. Why don't you take us back in time and tell us what that was about?
Well, that was the Four Horsemen. I've Victor Herbert and what's his name, Stephen Barrett. I've liked to forget these characters because
also known as the Quackbusters.
They that's what they called themselves. But what I would what I was aware of, as many of us were, was that, you know, the bigger form of quackery is that we know now, thanks to reports that began to come out in the last 14 years, that something on the order of a third to a half of what we do in conventional medicine is either is waste, and much of it harmful. We're talking about $1 trillion to $1.5 trillion, and this is not a voice of alternative medicine. This is a voice of the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences. We found out in the year 2000, after these characters in the mid-80s were going after acupuncturists and chiropractors, that medicine itself regularly performed was killing over 100,000 people a year. I think that I've always argued that there are issues definitely in these fields, and there are certainly people who are quacks and frauds in any line of work. But if you really want to go after the practices that are fraudulent and unnecessary that are going to have a significant influence on public health, cleaning up some of that waste would be a very good idea. There's a model for you.
I'm sorry?
I said there's a monologue for you on that.
Right. I mean, that you sound like a real firebrand in taking up the cudgel against conventional medicine. But clearly, that's not the approach you're taking when you work with academic institutions, major medical schools, and the government. You got to, tread more softly when you try to advance the cause of integrative therapy, because they're all about being conservative and not too wild.
Things changed, as you know, in 1993 when we learned the mainstream medicine learned that a third plus of adult Americans were at that point 19 using some form of alternative medicine. The whole game shifted.
The Eisenberg study.
Yes, exactly, the David Eisenberg study. And that $13.8 billion at that time was being spent for some of these therapies and providers. So, at that time, the so-called integrative conversation began, and within years of that, the field of integrative medicine was coined. The wonderful piece of what David did with that study was he frankly let anyone who using these therapies and providers and been called a quack or a fool for doing it look around their room and realize that they weren't alone, and that in fact a third of people were already mixing these kinds of services with regular medicine. So the integration was going on with patients. I'm a public health guy, and I really believe that it's important that we think about access and make sure that what we're doing here, the value we're adding ultimately, is accessible to people who don't have a lot of disposable income.
Well, I think one of the points that was in the Eisenberg study, one of the points in the Eisenberg study was that people who spend money on complementary and alternative medicine, it's even more amazing and laudable because they reach into their pockets and pay for therapies that often aren't covered by insurance. So it really bespeaks a high degree of dedication that, these are not covered services. But unfortunately, what that does, especially these days, is it makes alternative medicine sort of like an elite care or a concierge care, or call it what you will, Cadillac medicine, where only the wealthy upscale people who buy organic grass-fed beef at Whole Foods and eat fresh arugula are people who can access these marvelous therapies.
That's precisely what David found, and it's a challenge. I will say that from my perspective, what's at stake here is not so much the integration of different therapies and providers per se. What most interests me is actually developing a healthcare and developing a means by which we focus on creating health in the populations we serve rather than living in reaction. And at that point, an integrative medical doctor, a chiropractor, is a tool towards that end. The more empowered, the more involved, the more included are people who have whole person, holistic, health-focused perspectives, the more chance, this is my belief, the more chance we have to see changes in the kind of care people are able to access. And it is specifically to have access to certain types of services and providers, but it's also to move us towards a direction where our focus is actually on health rather than this continuous gerbil scramble of reactivity.
Right. Always, find a bug, use a drug, use drastic forms of intervention, such as recently transpired with our ex-president, George W. Bush. He goes to the doctor's office one day, they say you have a blockage, and boom, they Roto-Rooter it. When actually many studies are now showing that routine stenting for people who don't suffer from pain or disability, it's not cost effective. It doesn't make a difference in the outcomes, and it only racks up our medical costs.
Yeah, it's remarkable. When you think of some of the work that Dr. Mendelsohn, Dr. Murray, Dr. Pizzorno were doing in their literature reviews in the 80s, they were pulling out these kind of data about the ineffectiveness of limited effectiveness of surgeries and procedures that were extremely high cost and on which the business models of major hospitals and their heart centers were being built. But to jump forward to the Affordable Care Act, yeah. I know that's your interest. What happened with that act, and I would say for a variety of reasons, is that the whole concept of integrative health, integrative practice, actually was placed in the law, as were the concepts of complementary and alternative medicine practitioners. Licensed ones was the focus, although there's some language that just looks at integrative health practitioners. This is a big change. Now, a person can say, well, it was just tokenism. The language is only put in here and there in a couple of places. What does it mean? As an organizer, I would say that, first off, this is night and day compared to an era when there was absolutely no recognition of any role, any place, any value for these professions. You know, it was mandated in that law that this new patient-centered outcomes research institute was required to have a licensed integrative practitioner on its board of governors. The new Advisory Council on Prevention, Public Health, and Health Promotion inside another major AC was required to have representatives from these fields, and indeed does have a licensed acupuncturist. You know, Janet Kahn, a licensed massage therapist, PhD researcher, is on there, as well as Dean Ornish, an integrative-focused medical doctor and another graduate of the Andy Weil, is on it. So we've got in leadership now of a number of these initiatives, people who are bringing this whole person health-focused perception into the room. I can give you another example where we're seeing this leadership, or a couple of them. The Affordable Care Act also funded a major pain initiative. We realized that the way that this country has, mainly with opioids, been dealing with pain is caused an epidemic, is what it's being referred to as. And there was a study that funded, again, through the Institute of Medicine. And we were able, actually through the organization with which I work, to go knock on that door and say, listen, if you're looking at a future for pain, don't you think that chiropractors, acupuncturists, massage therapists, yoga people, for gut issues, naturopathic doctors should be in the room? There are millions of people, literally, who see these people pain conditions. And lo and behold, the Institute of Medicine actually listened. It made sense to them, and they invited us to nominate somebody on that committee. We did. It was Rick Marinelli. May he rest in peace. Is a naturopathic doctor and an acupuncturist who ran the American Academy of Pain Management. He was their president for a while. Rick is credited with helping to articulate the need for a culture change towards integrated care in pain treatment in the U.S. And so this is not just inclusion, but it's actually leadership that we're seeing from some of these providers in taking our health care in a direction where we need to take it.
Okay. You know, and that's, I think you're making some outstanding points, and, you know, I think it's a terrific accomplishment that we have recognition at a federal level, now at state levels, of the importance and legitimacy of various types of therapies so that they can literally sit at the table along with conventional medicine. The problem I have, and I see it in my practice, For many years, I participated with Medicare, which is a federal program. And what I discovered is that for the type of care that I offer, where I may sit for 20 or 30 or 40 minutes or an hour with a patient and counsel them in depth on lifestyle, do a very, very thorough investigation of their problems, talk about diet, offer them supplements, do a real thoughtful intervention, that the reimbursement style of Medicare is just incompatible with any kind of viable economics. That a visit where you don't do a procedure, or we don't do surgery, or we don't do standard therapies, or when you don't even offer any drugs, is sometimes deemed just a very, very short form kind of visit. You may receive $48.32, and that would barely pay the front desk people who are your, you know, receptionists and your nurse in the back who draws the blood. The problem that I foresee is, say, for example, there's legitimization, let's say, for acupuncture. Once the federal government steps in, they may say, great, well, we're going to cover acupuncture, but you're only allowed acupuncture for this, this, and this type of condition. When we know acupuncture is beneficial for thousands of conditions, you can only use these types of points. You can only see your patient 4 or 6 times. We're not going to offer you reimbursement for a long-term therapy, which may be required to treat certain chronic conditions. And you're also going to have to participate with us and file very, very complex documents via electronic medical records. You may be subject to inspections, audits. You'll have to add immeasurably to your office expense by buying computers and having office staff people who can wrangle with Medicare or the ACA, and so on and so on and so on. It gets very complicated when you try and parlay with the government, as much as they may acknowledge that there's some efficacy to the therapy. What's your take on that?
Well, excuse me, my take is that the only place I would disagree with some of the story that you're telling is that it's not and only the federal government, but you see from all private insurers as well. In the dark night of my soul, I look at my life work for 30 years in this. It's been about integration, and so it's all a compromise. You know, you make choices, and you gain things, and one loses some things.
You get your nose under the tent, as they say. And having done that, maybe we can expand the horizons. In your view,
I you get your nose under the tent, you create some access that's real for some people. You know that. I tell you what, that Washington State, where I is my base, when we got through government action the every category of provider passed in Washington State, many, many residents in that state gained access to the use of massage, acupuncture, chiropractic care, naturopathic services, direct entry midwives as covered benefits that they had not had before.
And Washington, however, is an interesting case, because I'll acknowledge that Washington is a very sort of granola-y kind of state, along with California, Oregon, and certain other states. They're very, very receptive to different forms of complementary and alternative medicine. So you have this on the one hand, but paradoxically, you have Washington State, who's really, really cracking down on some individuals who I think are among the foremost thinkers in complementary and alternative medicine in this country. I'm thinking of Dr. Jonathan Wright. I also know of another innovative physician in Washington who basically was hounded into giving up his license, surrendering his license, because he couldn't fight the powers that be. So on the one hand, the state offers a benign, gloved hand, and on the other, they tend to, exercise police powers, trying to quash some manifestations of complementary medicine. So that's a concern of mine.
Yeah, I've worked with Dr. Wright since I first started working in this field, off and on, and I'm only aware that something going on there, but I do not know the details. Governments are large entities. One may not know what the other is doing. There are many, many different souls involved. I mean, when you look at what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now, the this government, you know, includes Health and Human Services Secretary Sebelius, who has put out a FAQ, a frequently answered, asked question, statement about the non-discrimination in healthcare provision in the Affordable Care Act. That basically,
when you say non-discrimination, it's not about the discrimination against certain patients of color or bisexual orientation or religion. It's about discrimination against practitioners because, say, someone is a naturopath or a chiropractor versus an MD. That's the discrimination you're talking about, correct?
Yes, thank you for the clarification. It is about from the patient's perspective, it's about their access to their provider of choice for a certain type of service that is otherwise covered.
It's a wonderful concept. I mean, I embrace that.
Yeah, I love writing about the antagonism as, you know, antagonist, and it's the American Medical Association, more recently six medical specialties who have actually filed legislation to remove and revoke this section 2706. But I always love actually referring to them as pro-discrimination agents. I'm sure they don't much like seeing them that way.
It's not good public relations for the AMA, for sure.
Yeah, it's a tough position they're in, and you know, in truth, a lot of what they're fighting against is not chiropractors and naturopathic doctors and the like. They're trying to keep optometrists, advanced practice nurses, nurse anesthetists, from moving into what they believe is their holy turf. And that's where the larger dollar is relative to non-discrimination. And it's part of what's provoking this behavior. Certainly the interest of back doctors and not having chiropractors have full access to patients is a piece. And we know that the AMA's efforts to limit the scopes of other practitioners has reached to acupuncturists, to naturopathic doctors, chiropractors, and direct entry non-nurse midwives.
Well, they're seeking to avoid competition. I mean, any exclusive group will tend to do that. But can you hearken us back to the days of the battles between chiropractic and the American Medical Association, the so-called Wilk case? I think that's a very instructive example of how the AMA has tried to quash competition from chiropractors.
I like to remind all of the other disciplines that the chiropractors, one way you look at it, actually set up the era of openness integration. They did it by a 10-year-long lawsuit that began, I was told by one of my mentors, Lou Sportelli, a chiropractor with something like 50 years there.
He was in the vanguard of that, yeah.
He sure was. And literally somebody who worked inside the AMA kind of deep-throated them and delivered packages of files to a handful of chiropractors that showed that their anti-chiropractic committee was essentially engaged in antitrust activity. They were organizing with the American Hospital Association to keep chiropractors having access to hospitals and to business.
So this is sort of like the Edgar Snowden of the chiropractor AMA fight. Is that somebody on the AMA side slipped them some documents that made a very cogent case that the AMA was engaging in anti-competitive behavior in violation
correct.
Of the Sherman Antitrust Act. I mean, it's a monopolistic practice.
That's correct, and that was actually what the regional court found, and when the the federal court found, and I believe that finding is actually what changed the tenor of the integration discussion, that you just couldn't continue to go forward willy-nilly calling somebody a crack or a fraud from that point forward. And we began to have something like more civil discourse that, as I was saying a moment ago, is now a point where we see, heck, we have an integrative medical doctor trained at the University of Arizona program who's running health system transformation and cultural change for the Veterans Administration. And she's bringing the background of working with a holistic perspective with these different types of providers and therapies to the guidance of a huge initiative inside that agency. Now, this is, it's a, you know, you can go anti-government if you want. I'd rather have Dr. Tracy Gaudette running that agency than probably, you know, than anybody else, actually, knowing Tracy as I do. I think the VA is blessed, the health of our veterans is blessed by having her there. And that's a project, making a commitment to figuring out how to dance with this very large, discomforting system, and realizing you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. You're not going to get everything you want, but you can make some changes. You can change healthcare. I think a lot of it is like dropping, you know, rocks in a lake. You make a change in language in a federal document, and you create opportunities. And those opportunities shake down eventually to being choices that people can make about what kind of health care they can receive. And that's what sustains me. Right?
Well, you know, what you say, I mean, obviously, we're coming at it from different standpoints. You're working with the system, within the system to some extent. I'm a renegade to some extent outside the system, although, you know, clearly, you know, when I lecture to medical students, as I do from time to time, or, you know, when I am accepted as a host on a major mainstream medical radio station, that's to some extent making accommodations with the mainstream. But do you have concerns, you know, as you watch the implementation of the ACA, or as it's sometimes referred to as Obamacare, people are saying that there are going to be problems. There are, to say the least, difficulties in implementation. Parts of it are being suspended. Parts of it are being delayed. Do you have a concern that at the end of the day, they may cobble together some sort of compromise, but leave the holistic practitioners behind, because they'll say, look, it's the costs are prohibitive. We can't offer people hot and cold running acupuncture. You know, not everybody can get chiropractic. We have to make some compromises here. So you guys, I mean, we can't eliminate essential heart surgery. We can't eliminate care for people who are having traumatic accidents or HIV. So let's shortchange the community that is perhaps the weakest and least vocal, mm-hmm. the folks who want alternative medicine.
Oh, no, I mean, I totally agree that that's a possible outcome. And I think to the extent that we in the community are able to work, for instance, through the Integrative Healthcare Policy Consortium, through your professional associations to be vigilant, that's more of a likely outcome. And this is an evidence-based statement. In Washington State, when the law was passed in 95, the insurers, and it hasn't killed, you know, they've got good evidence that money's being saved by the people who now are using these practitioners. But the only reason that law is actually in place now, it came from three times efforts to get the law were rebuked. And then we happened in Deborah Sen, an insurance commissioner who was extraordinary, and she took them on in the courts, and she herself finally won a case in the federal court in San Francisco that supported her interpretation of the law and its application. So, I mean, anybody who's worked with the law will know that getting a law passed is at the time of great excitement and celebration. It's just the beginning of your work. The next step is, what are the regulations going to look like? What is the enforcement going to look like? So, for instance, in this case, the language that Secretary Sebelius, first off, we were watching efforts that the feds kind of punted the interpretation of this section 2706, non-discrimination, back to the states. And as we began to observe what states were doing, many of them were simply not choosing to include these other types of practitioners, as Senator Harkin, who backed this, had requested. So I know Janet Kahn and the advisory group I spoke to you about recently, they, in their report to the HHS, said you need to come out with a guidance statement, which federal agents do, agencies do sometimes. Well, when HHS, Health and Human Services, came out with that statement, it basically left the new insurance regimes off the hook, made it so they really, you could drive a truck through it and not really change your policies at all. Next thing we saw was then was Senator Harkin in a committee report for the appropriations bill for HHS included a direct rebuke to what Secretary Sebelius had said and asked them to redraft a guidance document. So this process is already unfolding. Just 2 weeks ago, on the 24th of July, these seven medical specialty organizations got a Congressman Harris, from a Republican from Maryland, to introduce legislation, the only purpose of which, it's House Bill 2816.
It's to block the implementation of this.
It's to absolutely just remove that section from the law.
Right. Well, yeah. You look, I think that's what's happening to ACA. I mean, with regards to whatever good intentions there may have been, or badly engineered parts of it, they're carving away various parts with exemptions and with retrenching on certain parts of the bill. The concern I have that what may happen, and this is the law of unforeseen consequences, is that this is a very well-intentioned bill, the idea being to get more naturopaths and chiropractors and natural health practitioners involved in the care of Americans, which is a laudable goal and fantastic. The problem that I foresee is, when you look at from the standpoint of the bureaucrats who are now faced with incredible deficits and the need to administer medicine cheaply with a doctor shortage, that the way they're going to construe it is that we'll put more well-trained nurses, nurse practitioners and advanced nursing personnel in the chairs of doctors, and then people will the new catchphrase is don't ask your doctor, ask your healthcare practitioner, because in many cases people on Obamacare or getting insurance through the exchanges won't be seeing doctors. They'll be seeing less well-trained individuals who can be employed more economically by the powers that be.
So I assume that some of that will happen and that there will be harm from some of it, but a tough thing for the medical profession to swallow is the 2010 Future of Nursing Report, again from the Institute of Medicine and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which basically looked at the evidence of advanced practice nursing, whether in primary care or nurse anesthetists, found that not only was it safe, but often the evidence showed that the care was often better.
Well, give me an idealistic nurse than more than a burnt out doctor any day. That's for sure.
I think that's a good judge. But this was a review. Come on, they weren't looking at any individuals here. This was a review of the evidence to date in 2010 from two very powerful agencies in U.S. healthcare. Who, the way I look at it, it's a positive thing. Is it did break the hegemony, the ownership of medicine by medical doctors, and it allowed us to have leadership from and more voices from other disciplines. I know I don't like, we can criticize medicine and what it does. It's never something that's very acceptable to actually criticize doctors. We like to blame on the system, but the fact is it's been on the watch of this era of sort of full MD control, when we've really had darn horrendous outcomes. You can't blame it all on the government. The outcomes are bought into by hospitals and health systems that are mainly run by medical doctors, mainly run by specialists, because that's where the biggest dollar is. But it's been on their watch that they've kind of allowed medicine to, you know, I call it, it's Humvee economics. If you're trying to generate revenue, you make more profit off of things that cost more. Right. And in medicine, that means what you do in tertiary care. That means, you know, things like coronary artery bypass grafts. That's where the dollar is. And so doctors have allowed us to develop a system that's creating, you know, one-third is waste. That's a trillion dollars. That's more than we spend on our military every year. It's happened on the watch. I really feel like, and here I'm an outsider from your perspective probably, but I think it's a good time to have a variety of voices in leadership, and that's what the IOM and Robert Wood Johnson said. They talked about the need of nurses to be in leadership, to help lead in the coming era. I think we need to have and see more of these integrative health practitioners. And by that I mean integrative medical doctors and functional medical doctors stepping up and leading. I think there is real opportunity because, my gosh, did it ever get... We need some new leadership, you know? It really got horrible. If you take in those data and, you know, it kind of ranks with the melting glaciers. No, these are big horrors, and we don't frequently take them in.
Well, okay. So, you know, in our discussion, I think I've gained a little better understanding of how you hope to create change within the medical system. Perhaps it's not appropriate to completely write off the powers that be as an instrument of change. And certainly we hope for the best possible outcome. It's worth a try. And you have made tremendous progress in introducing ideas of complementary alternative medicine into government and into academic settings. And there will be a sea change, no question. We don't know how that's going to turn out, whether it's going to be a government-implemented system or a private enterprise system or a hybrid of those two. But certainly change will happen. And we appreciate your efforts on behalf of change.
Well, thank you. And you should know that there's not a thing that I do that where I'm not, you know, I articulate things. I write about things. In some ways I organize, but virtually everything I do is a function of working in collaboration and with large numbers of others. Working a lot harder for this change. I'd love to give you a quote because it'll help
sure.
you understand where I come from. I actually had a chance to speak at the commencement, give the commencement address at New York Chiropractic College.
Oh, wow, great.
Last weekend, and I used this quote from Vaclav Havel. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's
it's a freedom fighter from Czechoslovakia. The what was it called, the Velvet Spring? Or
Yeah, the Velvet Underground, but yes. So he began as a poet and artist, and became a dissident and subsequently became president. And he says this about hope. He says, hope is definitely not the same thing as optimism. It is not the conviction that something will turn out well, but the certainty that something makes sense regardless of how it turns out. When you ask me about concerns about what may happen, I agree with every one of your concerns. I think that this thing might unwind horribly. That being said, the hope I have, which is not optimism that it will happen, but the hope I have is based on the good sense that developing a system that begins to figure out how to focus on keeping people healthy that respects that healthcare is about the whole person. These are directions to be moving the energy in our community, in our culture, and in our health systems. I do believe that, you know, the work does change opportunities one person at a time, you know, one place at a time. But gosh, the health system itself, and in the context of a, you know, a U.S. government deficit that's pretty loco and a global economy that's teetering ways, to have optimism about that, you know, I think you've got to be pretty loco. But one can have hope.
One can have
as
hope.
As Havel puts it. And it's actually kind of my my koan. It's what I repeat to myself. And it sustains me with my work. You know, it's not the same thing. It's the certainty that something makes sense, regardless of how it turns out.
Well, great. I honor your work, and I appreciate your efforts on behalf of Complementary Alternative Medicine. People need to know about it. The website is what?
It's theintegratorblog.com, theintegratorblog.com, and it's really targets people in leadership, people who care about policy. It'll keep you abreast of what's going on at the federal level with things like discrimination. It'll show you. I love my metaphor for this, living down here in Puerto Rico, is that I scroll through the developments in healthcare, kind of like the roosters and chickens that run through our yard. I peck for things that are positive. And so when we find evidence, you know, just last month, for instance, the VA said that it's opening up a process to have some residencies for chiropractors. It's a big breakthrough. 2 months ago, you know, Board of Integrative Medicine for medical doctors and osteopaths officially opened up its applications. I think these are good steps. And so it's that kind of reporting that a person will see, particularly through, if you look at the roundups, the monthly kind of newsletter within the newsletter that I put.
On
you
that,
can sign up on the right side.
Okay, so it's integratorblog.com, correct?
Theintegratorblog.com, exactly.
Great. So on that hopeful metaphor, the metaphor of either slim pickings or chicken scratchings, we'll conclude this podcast. As they say, I appreciate your work. We're coming at it from different perspectives, with different levels of confidence in the ability of government to help solve our problems. But it's important work nonetheless, and we honor you for your efforts. So thanks very much, John Weeks, for joining us.
Thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate your work through all these years as well.
My pleasure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.